I'll call the meeting to order. We do have a lot of things at the legislature running late today. I myself missed 5 appointments this morning while the Finance Committee dealt with the bonding bill. So I know that legislators will trickle in, and this is the time, too, when some people are more than one place. So we have actually 3 members excused today. But we're going to start out with, so we can get through our agenda with, we do have a quorum. Good. Well, then we'll start out with the minutes. Representative Brown, would you like to move the minutes?
I move the minutes.
Representative Brown moves the minutes of the February 27th meeting. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Representative Owen, welcome to the committee again. You're bringing forward lots of good legislation this year. And I will move House File 2860 for you. And please tell us about your bill. And I know you've got several testifiers who've come a long ways.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I do have several testifiers, so I'll keep my comments limited. This is a unique situation in the Lancaster School District where, because of a referendum that occurred to make a new school in the Hallock Kennedy School District area, they caused the travel disparity to be lost by Lancaster because it moved too close to the border to them. And if you have a piece of a map passed out that will show exactly how big this Lancaster School District is, and it's just not even feasible to consider them going to possibly combine with Hallock Kennedy or anybody else, because it's just a huge district. So this is really a request to use some other, I believe it's called transition aid money at this time, which is already in the budget from last year, because this happened after last year's meeting. And at this stage, I'll turn it over to Julie Shostrand, chairman of the Lancaster School District, and she'll introduce the other witnesses. The other people here as backup, not necessarily witnesses, because we'll keep it to one.
Very good. We appreciate that. Thank you, and welcome, Ms. Shostrand. Please restate your name for the tape and your school board title.
Julie Shostrand, Lancaster Board Chair, and I brought with me today George Hanson, Lancaster Board, and Brad Homestead, who is our superintendent at Lancaster. Madam Chair, committee members, thank you for allowing us to present our information. House Bill 2860 is extremely important to the Lancaster School District. We are not asking for new funding. We are asking to replace our elementary sparsity aid with transition aid. Elementary sparsity aid generates 3.7% of our annual revenue. Losing elementary sparsity aid will do irreparable damage to our fund balance. Our elementary sparsity aid will be wiped out because a neighboring school district passed a referendum to close their elementary school in Kennedy and move those students to the Hallock site. So through no action or inaction on our part, we will lose our elementary sparsity aid. Regarding state funding, we talked to Mr. Tom Melcher and Mr. Bob Porter, directors of program finance at the Minnesota Department of Education, and neither could ever recall a situation like ours, and we are asking to be held harmless. Lancaster Public School is not your average rural Minnesota school. This is a quality school in every sense of the word. Our graduation rate exceeds 94%, and our attendance rate exceeds 95%. In the past 15 months, our school has received numerous state and national awards. We received the Minnesota Senate Award for Excellence in Education. We received Governor Pawlenty's Governor's Fitch School Award, and we were also notified by U.S. News and World Report that we have been identified as being one of the very best high schools in the United States. In fact, we were in the top 6% nationally. Criteria for these awards include MCA and DSP test results for all students, including all special populations, district curriculums, classroom activities, and college readiness of graduates. Our local taxpayers have already dug deep into their pockets. Currently, we have 2 referendums on the books. Together, they total $1,688 per pupil unit. Over 50% of our families qualify for free or reduced meals, so I don't know if our taxpayers can be burdened further. We live in a sparsely populated area of the state. Our county's population density is only 4.1 or 4.8 people per square mile. Including open enrollment students, our enrollment area is 456 square miles, 42% of the entire county. Our five regular bus routes travel almost 500 miles daily. If our school did not exist, those students on our eastern boundary would have to travel over 45 miles to get to their new school. That would amount to a 1.5-hour bus ride one way. This really is a huge part of our budget. We are a high-functioning school. Our local taxpayers have dug deep. We aren't asking for additional dollars. Please keep our current level of funding in place. Hold us harmless. Thank you for your consideration of House Bill 2860.
Thank you very much. Any questions from members?
Comments?
Representative House, the comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really like the idea of helping them out here. I like to treat everybody the same, but in this situation, they're doing what makes sense as far as putting the school together, and then I hate to see that where they get penalized for doing that, so I really would hope that we can find a way to make this work.
Thank you, Representative House, and we're doing all we can to get some money into this committee. Because this is the sort of bill that, you know, through no fault of your own and through people doing the right thing, as Representative Faust said, here you end up with this situation, and it seems to me that's what transition revenue is for. It's to hold people harmless and transition them into better days. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering if Council could tell us whether or not this is precedent-setting. Have we done this with transition before, or have we used some other mechanism?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, there's been a few examples where we've tried to help districts on the sparsity front because of changes in location. On the secondary level, the Chocayo Alberta School District ran into some difficulties about which school was being counted as the school, and the legislature worked with them on that issue. Secondly, there was another case where the change for, I believe it was the Net Lake School District, resulted in a legislative change to adjust the mileage that was used to the next nearest school. And then finally, the current limit in statute, which is 20 miles to the next nearest school, or which used to be 20 miles to the next nearest school, was lowered to 19 miles when it became apparent that one district that was currently claiming elementary sparsity was a little bit short of that 20-mile limit. So in my time here, those have been the three times when we tried to adjust for facilities locations.
Madam Representative Erickson, thank you, Madam Chair, for the follow-up. So, Mr. Strom, we made the adjustments in the sparsity area rather than moving into some other category.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, in two of the three cases we made it in the sparsity area, for Chocayo, Alberta, we actually made an adjustment on their referendum to account for the sparsity shift.
Thank you. Any other questions? Any testimony from the audience? Representative Owen, any closing comments?
No, just thank you for listening to us. I have two pages of information you can look at if you have any other details that you need to know.
Thank you very much, and appreciate all of you coming down, and we're very glad we could accommodate you so you didn't have to come down one day for the Senate and another day for the House. So I hope that hearing went as well in the Senate. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And we'll lay over House File 2860 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Benson.
Mm-hmm. Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Welcome, Representative Benson, and you can move your bill since you're on this committee.
Well, that would be nice. I'd like to move House File 2980 for possible inclusion.
Representative Benson moves House File 2980. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to begin by inviting Board Chair John Malone up here, and then I'll make a few brief comments and turn it over to him and some others who will be speaking in turn.
Very good. Welcome, Mr. Malone. It's good to see you, and if you would restate your name for the tape and your title.
Finley, Madam Chair. My name is John Malone. I'm vice chair of the Orono School Board and current chair of the Association of Metropolitan School District.
And before Mr. Malone begins, I just might say that I became interested in these issues after serving with Representative Faust on his committee, and discovered all kinds of concerns having to do with maintenance of school infrastructure, and the fact that there had not been certain changes necessary to meet growing responsibilities and expenses. And I guess the most shocking to me was to discover that over the last number of years, facilities, repair and upkeep, issues like that have been escalating. And looking at the state budget problems we have, I see a little opportunity for relief from the state government. And I think a study about 4 years ago was made indicating that the backlog now was reaching $4 billion statewide, and I suspect in the last 4 years it has increased even more. And so I think this request is very timely, even taking into consideration our desire to protect homeowners from increased property taxes, etc. And of course, I understand the ramifications that this bill may have in that regard. But not going into that any more detail, please, I will introduce Mr. Malone.
All right, and for the tape, that was Representative John Benson, and Mr. Malone, back to you.
Well, thank you very much. I'm currently in my eighth year on the Orono School Board, and in those 8 years, we've had to run six referendums for operating capital levies and bonds. In the 5 years before I came on the board, our district ran three referendums to seek voter approval to build a much-needed new middle school. And as difficult and divisive as those three campaigns to get that middle school built were, I do feel that there was an ongoing process of aligning what the school administration would like to see in this new building and what the community would actually support. Each of the proposals was scaled back and eventually alignment was achieved, and we were able to pass that. And I thought that was, you know, in retrospect, entirely appropriate in terms of the community saying how much of a new middle school would really be supported. I would contrast that process with what we've had to go through to obtain voter approval to repair and update our aging buildings, where you don't have the discretionary kind of choices you do in building a new school. Other than our new middle school, our district buildings average about 50 years old, so we're very comparable to many districts in the state, where in the early 50s, as baby boomers started to be born, buildings were built, and built quickly and sufficient for the purposes at those times. We've been planning for the update and repair for the last 4 or 5 years, and it's included a number of different studies, both architectural and engineering, energy audits, and extended intense community dialogue regarding these repairs, how they would be done, and why they were needed. Most recently, we had a Blue Ribbon Task Force step forward of six local contractors who live in our area, all CEOs of major contracting companies, and they volunteered about $60,000 worth of time and spent months and months going through the bowels of our building with a fine-tooth comb. And they came forth to our school board in October of this year with a recommendation as to what would be needed to properly renovate and repair our aging buildings. And they'd also gone through an architectural and engineering study that had been done in 2004 that had been the source document for our 2005 referendum campaign to do a renovation and repair, which had failed. They went through that report, they made some additions, they made some deletions, and came forth with a $39 million plan to repair and update our school. In 2005, that bill had been $31 million, and the primary reason for that difference was simply inflation. Construction is running between 6 and 10%. We asked the Blue Ribbon Task Force in October of this year, what would you suggest we do differently if we take this to the voters and it fails? And to a person that's very fiscally conservative and I think inherently skeptical group of contractors said, not one thing could you change. Everything we have in this is absolutely necessary to get the kind of buildings that you need to operate in today's environment. As we entered into the referendum that we just had, we had everything going for us. We had very enthusiastic community support for our schools. We had an absolutely outstanding parents group who worked day and night. We had a very popular and respected superintendent, Karen Orcutt, who also worked day and night. And we also had an extremely compelling case to present. Our classroom could be anywhere from 40 degrees to 80 degrees. The roofs were leaking. The boiler system that had been put in 57 years ago. And in fact, when we showed it on a video, one of our residents said, did you film this in Moscow? I mean, that's the kind of boiler system that we were dealing with. We couldn't even get parts for this anymore because it was so old. We had to have them custom made. We had 1950s era lighting and electrical systems that were just totally inadequate to the present needs. So it really was a compelling case. And in my opinion, anybody who spent 20 minutes listening to the situation could easily ascertain the need. And yet, we only won by 130 votes. Now our opponents have brought two, in my opinion, absolutely meritless lawsuits to try and overturn the results of the election. So the process goes on. We'll have to go to court to get those ballot contests thrown out. Whether we'll be able to start construction this year or not is up in the air. And if we don't, it'll increase the cost by $3 to $4 million. So I'd ask yourself to put yourself in the shoes of one of our district residents involved in this incredibly intense and frustrating experience when you receive your February 26th issue of the Lake Shore Weekly newspaper. We have two headlines. One, Orono referendum faces a court challenge. And this relates to our $39 million referendum to repair and renovate our aging buildings. And the other headline is pumping money into the Minnetonka schools. School district proposes to spend $39.6 million on its aging building. One slight difference. There it took a school board vote to simply approve it. And it was a much needed renovation and repair. Our districts are mirror images of each other in many ways. The building ages, we're actually a little bit older than they are, but the design, the needs are all exactly the same. So here we had $39 million for the identical purpose, to repair and renovate aging buildings in neighboring districts that are absolute mirror images of each other, and we simply don't think there's any rational basis to say that because the district does not have 1.5 million square feet, that these entirely disparate results should obtain. I think if the need is there. We won, fortunately, our referendum, and hopefully we'll get the repairs completed. A lot of districts our size simply can't win these referendums. It has nothing to do with the merits or the scale of the project. It has everything to do with the resources that are marshaled from a volunteer group to motivate supporters to go out and vote, to overcome that solid block of intransigent no voters that exists in every district. Our no voters are always the same. It's just a question of whether we can motivate enough parents and citizen supporters to get out and vote. The no votes, regardless of the merits, are there. We simply have to devote all this time and money and resource to motivate our parents to go out and vote. And I just think that when you're looking at a situation where we had basically what the contractor told us was you have, you know, inhabitable buildings. You cannot rent these buildings anywhere. And yet it took all of that just to get a yes vote. Making the necessary repairs and renovations just should not be, you know, the responsibility of these vote yes groups, but me, it's just responsible stewardship. And I would ask that you consider deleting the reference to the minimum square footage and allow all school districts to access this for the very sound reasons that you allow the larger school districts to do so. Thank you very much. I must say it's a real honor to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Malone. Before we go to the next testifier, Representative Benson, you have the three handouts in here. Do you want to have the staff go through these so that members kind of have a background for
yes,
the next
please.
Testifiers?
I would appreciate that.
Okay. I don't know who's going to go through it, Mr. Strom or Mr. Crow? Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. There are three separate printouts in your packet designed to show the formulas that are being changed. The first of those is entitled Building Lease Levy for Taxes Payable in 2008. This printout shows the school district's numerical order with the amount of their lease levy for this last year for taxes payable in 2008, as well as the student count that the majority of that lease levy is based on. The limit of $100 per pupil is based on the resident pupil count.
You can see at the top of the printout that $46 million of lease levy is there. School districts are limited to not more than $100 per pupil unless they're a member of an intermediate school district, in which case they're entitled to another up to $25 per pupil unit. And you can see how those lease levies are distributed throughout the state on the different school districts. The second printout is for the deferred maintenance program. And this printout shows the revenue for which, for the first time this year, all school districts in the state that were not in the alternative facilities program were eligible for up to $60 per pupil unit in deferred maintenance revenue. While that formula is an equalized aid and levy, the equalizing factor is relatively low compared to the average tax base now, so the majority of that revenue is set as levy instead of aid. Out of the $26 million of revenue, about $24 million is levy, and the remaining $2 million is aid. Each district's amount is scaled by a building age index. The district gets the full $60 per pupil if its age index is 35 years of age or older. You can see from the top line there that the average age of school facilities in Minnesota is 32 years. So if you go up and down that list, if a district has in the third to last column less than $60 of revenue per pupil, that's because their building age index is somewhat less than the 35 years required. And finally, Madam Chair, the third printout of your packet is entitled Alternative Facilities Revenue for Fiscal Year 2009. And this is the program the testifier was just mentioning, where there's both a square footage and age requirement. There are about 20 school districts in the state that qualify for revenue under this program. All of the remaining districts in the state currently don't. Although with the most recent data now, it looks like two more districts will qualify for fiscal year 2010. As you look down that list, you can see that the amounts are shown on a per pupil basis, and then you can see in the next column the square footage of each district as well as the average age. You can see that the alternative facilities program has a total revenue of about $140 million for the year, $120 million of that coming through the local levy. If you look on the very right-hand column, you can see how that levy is, or how that revenue is distributed on a district basis, and you can look up and down that list there and see the relative dollar amounts. There are a few districts that do a tremendous amount of alternative facilities work. The average is about $172 across the state, but of course that average would be smaller if we looked at just those districts that are, or would be larger if we look at just those districts that are participating. So, Madam Chair, that's a brief summary of the three printouts that are in your packet.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. What are the two districts that are almost ready to qualify?
Madam Chair, if you look on the third page, or the second page rather, in Hennepin County, District 272 Eden Prairie is over the 1.8 million square footage. And again, I'm not exactly positive on this data, but we're showing that Edina would have over 1.5 million square feet and 37 years of as an average age. So that's what the current figures for the department are showing. And there's one other, oh, I'm sorry, and the Wayzata School District is getting close, but it's got a couple of more years on its age to go.
Okay, thank you very much. We have Representative Erickson and then Representative Marquardt. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Strom, on the alternative facilities, if we were to enact this proposal, we would be adding 230 more school districts, correct?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, I believe that's right, yes. Uh-huh.
Or, you know, about that.
Yes.
So what two figures would we have to look at, Mr. Strom, to determine whether or not there's a qualifying district? We look first at...
Madam Chair, the average age has changed to 25, so the years in that average age column, the 25 years... Is the limit there, and there's also the 66 pupils per grade limit, which I'm not sure in this bill if that was an oversight not to have struck that or not.
Ooh.
In a later bill that 66 pupil per grade is struck, and I'm not sure if I perhaps made a drafting mistake on this bill or not. That hasn't come up much because the square footage is so large, but if we just go to an age requirement, that would be the other thing for members of this committee to consider, whether there should be some minimum population at the school site in order to qualify.
Madam Chair, follow-up. Thank you. Mr. Strom, that was very helpful. But I have a personal question. On page 3 of the lease levy, Princeton is not in an intermediate district, but I noticed we're at 126, and I know we're desperate. But was that an exception that was made? And I'm delighted if it was, but I feel bad for others if it was.
Madam Chair, there are two very other kinds of levies that can be rolled in there. Members of the TIE facility, and I don't know the Princeton is that, are able to lease for a portion of the building where TIE is located.
No.
And then there's another exception for some very small lease payments that were entered into a number of years ago. So it may be one of those two effects that has been slightly above the $100.
Thank you very much. Representative Markworth.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Mr. Strong, a question on this alternative facilities revenue. Is this equalized? I mean, why do some receive aid and some do not? I mean,
how does that...
Good question. Mr. Strong.
Madam Chair, Representative Markworth. This has been a sore spot in the Education Committee since 1997 when the Tax Committee did this to the Education Committee.
Policy Representative Markworth.
During 1997 and 1998, the Tax Committee was looking to lower class rates on certain types of property. And one of the effects of doing so was that there was a lot of shifting among school districts on their and all taxing jurisdictions about the taxing type. And the Tax Committee was looking for a lever, essentially, to reduce the levy impact of those shifts on the Minneapolis School District particularly. But the Minneapolis and St. Paul School Districts were the two that were looking very badly when the class rates were trying to be compressed. And so the Tax Committee decided that one way to do this would simply be to modify the alternative facilities formula and pay some of that in aid so that the school levies could be reduced to a level so that they didn't stick out so much so that the class rates could be compressed amongst the property types. And so what happened in the first year, and I believe it was in 1997, about $16 million of aid was put out for that purpose. One of the legislators whose district qualified for the program but did not get any aid out of that change screamed bloody murder the next year, and so the $2.8 million was added as a way to try and balance that out.
Was this a senior member chairman?
Madam Chair, this was a former chair of the Education Finance Committee.
former.
So, Mr. Chair, there's really no relationship at all to the education side of this, but from the tax point of view, the whole purpose was to try and compress the class rates at that time and balance out that shift with a levy reduction.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And members, this particular law, kind of like that, the equity law, there's just some things we have done here in the legislature, usually in the tax committee, that just plain don't work very well, and they aren't very fair. And somehow, this idea that only the large districts get to do this and not the small districts, and especially when we look at that 40-year-old bond bill that Representative Brown and Representative Cornish had, has always bothered me. And so we have a variety of bills, and we're looking at these, and we have Representative Faust's Facilities Committee, and this is a big part of our conundrum. Representative Benson, so that you can plan your time, I see you have three more testifiers. And we have four more bills after you.
All right.
You have to finish by 3, and if you could be done at all before then, that
will.
Would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay.
Representative Benson.
Thank you. In regards to, before we go on this issue of the 66 students per grade, it hadn't come up, apparently, because there are no schools that fit. I don't know if I could accept advice, or we could accept advice as to whether it doesn't matter to me whether we keep it or strike it. It wasn't the focus of her interest this time. Maybe Mr. Strom would have something to say, which I'm hoping I will get an autograph from him after this last incredible discussion of the history of all this that he just presented to the committee.
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, I think the policy issue behind that 66 students per grade was an issue of whether there are some facilities in small communities where perhaps deferred maintenance is not the right alternative to using that facility. It's not clear to me that the 66 students per grade, which at the time when this was passed was sort of a code for a school serving three sections, whether that's still the right number or not. There may maybe a different number that people have in mind, but I think the policy question is whether some very small schools, whether maintenance should be done to those facilities or whether they should look at options with their neighboring districts. That's really the key, I think. If I could add one more thing on that, of course, the relatively speaking, the large districts are going to be where the majority of the levy is at. So from a cost point of view, eliminating a 66 pupil per grade minimum is probably not very significant.
Okay.
Your next testifier, Representative Ben.
Yes, there were no other questions, I believe, for Kamal. Thank you. I'd like to ask Mr. Bezek and Ms. Jorgensen come forward.
Welcome, Mr. Bezek and Ms. Jorgensen. If you could, whichever one of you is first, state your name and title for the case. And welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Dr. Mark Bezek, Superintendent of Schools of Elk River, School District 728. Thank you for hearing us today. Our story is a little different than typical districts around the state. Our problem is growth. We also have some expiring levies coming up, which puts us in a little bit of a financial pinch. But we're the second largest district in the Elk State of Minnesota, second to Rochester. We're the ninth largest in the state at around 12,500 students. And we're growing about 300 to 500 students a year, which really puts us as an anomaly in the state. When we're built out in about 25, 30 years, we'll have approximately 30,000 students. We're basically the next Anoka Hennepin that's happening. Run about $125 million budget, but through cuts over the years, we run a very basic curriculum. We failed a very important bond referendum last year that would have taken care of us for the next 5 to 7 years. It was a $133 million bond, which included a 1,000 student high school in Zimmerman, seats for about 300 more students in Elk River, 600 student addition into Rogers, and multiple renovations to other buildings. And we also lost a levy along with that because we run such a low fund balance, we can't run a bond without a levy. So our issue is we've got about 400 seats left in our district. And again, growing 300 to 500 a year. 1 year we grew 700. We have no more room. And that's why we're after this increase in lease levy funding from $100 per student to $150. That would generate roughly about $9 million more dollars for us in concrete. The board believes more in structure rather than pulling in portables or temporary buildings. We believe it's a better investment. Right now, we're currently using about half of our lease levy authority at roughly around, I think we generated around $1.4 million. We're using a little over $700,000, but we can't invest all that in case we have some issues. So again, we're looking for that increase that would generate enough money for us to put some additions onto some buildings so we can at least house kids in bricks and mortar.
Thank you, Dr. Bezek. Ms. Jorgensen.
Hi, I'm Jolene Jorgensen. I'm a director on the Elk River Area School Board, and I'm here just to support Dr. Bezek and be the representative of the board, is that we would like to be able to have those dollars and be accountable at a local level for this, because we have really cities that are against each other, communities against each other, running these bonds and these referendums that fail, just as you've heard, many, many districts that are failing, and they have a lot of people that are fighting for this. So we want to put the kids first, as you hear a lot, and we want to put on those additions. Even though we sometimes get no's, we also get the yeses, and we have frustration and inequities that are happening because of our facilities that are holding back our kids and our curriculum to be expanded. So again, we want to solve our issues at a local level, be able to be accountable at a school board level for those funds, and continue to move the education forward in Elk River.
Thank you very much. Dr. Bezek.
One more comment. We are in the midst of boundary changes right now because of our growth. And if any of you have been through those or closing schools, it's a no-win situation.
Fun. Many of us are former school board members.
And we will be going through these probably every year until we have a solution to these problems. Our bond referendum was set to take us for 5-6 years into the future. But again, with you know, the revenue from the state declining, with community sentiment of no more taxes, and with all of our costs, unions what having you saying, we want more, we're in a pinch, and we need some help.
Mm-hmm. And we had the bonding committee today where we got very few of our K-12 bills into the bonding bill because other legislators think, well, let them levy for their buildings. But then, as we're finding out today, it isn't quite so easy just to do that with all the rules and regulations that we have. And so I think one way or the other, we have to figure out how to let our school districts maintain their buildings if we're not going to help from here. So thank you very much. And Superintendent?
May I ask a question?
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Dr. Buzik, Representative Erickson.
Yes. Approximately what would this cost Elk River residents if we were to implement this? In any ballpark figure you have?
Roughly, if our if we used our entire lease levy amount, it would be less than 2% increase on tax rolls, which I don't have a specific number, but it would be less than 2% increase in that portion of their taxes.
Any other
questions? And Madam Chair, Elk River does have, they do have a grave need. I visited their school district recently and listened to Dr. Buzik and others give us a presentation. It's such a fast-growing district without the ability to build buildings they're hurting.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Maybe we better get up your third chance
yes,
to fire
back
to Representative Benson.
I would like to call Sandy Lewandowski up here from Intermediate District 287. She will discuss the last portion of this particular bill.
Very good. Welcome, Dr. Lewandowski.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to present today. My name is Sandy Lewandowski. I'm the superintendent of Intermediate School District 287, and we are one of three intermediate districts that are part of the metro area, and we, between three intermediates, we cover about 33 districts that are members and a number of other districts that are non-members. What I'd like to do is show you just a little different snapshot of this, probably the same problem, but coming from a little bit different student base. And I'd like to show you just a 3-minute video clip of one of the facilities that we are currently replacing and what the cost is to our member district. So about 3 minutes and just a few brief remarks.
That will give us 2 minutes, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Intermediate District 287 is a consortium of 13 West Metropolitan School Districts. The population they serve is comprised of 1-3% of their member district students. These students require specialized services ranging from classes for the gifted and talented to programs for students with significant special education needs. Some of the old buildings that we use have really interfered with our teachers' ability to do a good job with very complex student needs coming into their classroom. Public schools are now serving students who previously were in residential treatment facilities, correction facilities, state hospitals. Now they're the public education's responsibility. Having buildings that allow us to do that safely is a critical factor for us.
Probably our biggest problem here is the infrastructure. It's age village, definitely. We can't seem to keep paint on the walls. It's hard to heat. It's hard to have consistent heater cool because some rooms just get blasted. We have a boiler that's off of 50 years old. It's very inefficient. There's lots and lots of electrical problems. We have extension cords running willy-nilly.
Well, it'll be about a 2.5 minute clip.
Okay.
Madam Chair, arguably intermediate districts provide services for our members for the most severely handicapped, the most mentally ill, and the most violent students within, in our case, Hennepin County. And the severity of these students sent to us by our members has increased significantly over the past few years. In fact, last year I testified before this committee that schools have really become the primary provider for public services previously provided by residential treatment facilities, hospital crisis wards, and juvenile correction programs. Because of this, our school board has moved toward a long-term facility plan that moves us from providing these programs in older buildings that our member districts haven't been using, or buildings that we've leased commercially and then tried to remodel. We've gone instead to a board-approved plan that customizes the facilities for these very unique and very volatile students within the public school system. And what that has done for us in the case of some of the facilities you saw up on that screen is allowed us in the south area in Richfield to build a new building that is customized to meet the needs of those students. Unfortunately for us, for our members, that has maxed out the lease levy capacity of about 6 of our members that access the $25 intermediate money, and for 2 or 3 of our members, it's maxing out the whole $125 of the amount. We are about halfway through our long-term facility plan. We will need to build another building or do something in the north area, and what I'm suggesting to you is that this bill be considered in order to give districts the ability to provide a responsible facility for students that used to be served in other facilities and now are the responsibility of the public schools. And
thank
with that,
you.
I'll
thank you very, very much. Any testimony from the audience? I don't see any legislators on the list. I do see one, Representative Demmer, and then we'll go to you, Representative Benson, for your closing short statement. Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I've been thinking here about this, the more than 66 students per grade, and I don't know what the fiscal result of this would be, but it seems to me, Representative Benson, if you're okay with that, I would offer an oral amendment to something like that also and renumber. I think in the spirit of letting local districts make their choices about what they want to do, and quite frankly, we're giving local school boards a little bit more control here, I think that might be a good idea.
So, Representative Demmer, you're just suggesting for Representative Benson when he comes forward later.
You would make that an amendment, a friendly amendment?
Yeah, I would offer that as an oral amendment, Madam Chair, to strike line 1.11 and then renumber accordingly.
Representative Demmer is offering an amendment, and Representative Benson is agreeable to it, to strike line 1.11 and renumber accordingly. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Any other questions? I don't see any, so thank you, Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a very quick response to all of this. I became interested in this because, first of all, I do believe in local control of schools. I think if we elect school boards, they ought to be able to make some decisions for themselves. The second reason I'm interested in this is because I do not see any prospect in the near future that the state will be able to provide the resources necessary for these schools to maintain their facilities. And thirdly, I just think that it's very important that however it's done, that the safety and health of children in schools be protected and enhanced. And in fact, I believe that a decent-looking, clean, functional school building also adds to academic improvement for children. I think a real message is sent to children when they have a facility that is equal to the educational experience that we in the state of Minnesota believe they ought to have. And with that, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Benson. You're a pragmatist and well said about the buildings. I suspect you will not get much argument from at least this committee.
Right.
So thank you, and to your testifiers.
Bye.
welcome Representative Dreiling to the testifiers table.
Madam Chair.
Please state your name for the record, and after that I think you can move your bill.
Okay, thank you very much, Madam Chair, and I will, I'm Representative Dreiling, of course, and I will move House File 2846.
Thank you, Representative Dreiling. I suggest move 2846 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, I believe. So go ahead and present your bill, Representative Dreiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And now that Representative Benson has done all the work, you understand alternative facilities revenue. And if we would pass his bill, which would be my preference, we would not need this bill at all. But Roseville Area Schools, and I have with me our superintendent, Dr. John Pine, is already in this program. But even for us, it doesn't work perfectly because the school district would like to be efficient and actually sell an old building, and that would then mean we would no longer qualify for this. So it's kind of a catch-22. It's kind of like the Representative Olin bill. By doing the right thing, then you ape yourself out of funding that you once had. So I will turn it over to, and so this bill would just say that once you get this revenue, you can do the right thing and sell buildings if you need to, and then you could still stay in the program. And I will turn this over to Dr. Tyne to explain further.
Welcome, Dr. Tyne, to the committee. Please state your name for the record and give your testimony.
My name is John Tyne, and I serve as the superintendent of Roseville Area Schools. Madam Chair, committee members, thank you for allowing me to address you today. Roseville Area Schools finds itself in a catch-22. Currently, we qualify for the alternative bonding facility revenue, and we've used that to maintain our facilities. But in an effort to be fiscally responsible and to keep our costs as low as we possibly can, our request would be that you would allow this our district and any other district that qualifies as so to divest themselves of property. And there are a couple of reasons for this. One, we qualify, but if we divest ourselves of the property, we fail to qualify. And it puts us in a situation where we have to retain a piece of property that really does not benefit the taxpayers or the district, except to allow us to qualify for the alternative bonding facility. The outcome of you allowing to do this will be the district will be able to maintain its facilities and make them safe and secure for our students and our community to use. It will also allow us to reduce our costs, because we will not be required to maintain an unneeded facility. So I'm hoping that in your wisdom, you'll allow us to use a little bit of common sense. Sometimes that's an oxymoron when you talk about school administrators, but we're really, really working. I want you to know that. And we want to make sure that we operate as efficiently and as cheaply as we possibly can and to the best of our ability. Thank you. Do you have any questions?
Thank you, Dr. Pine. Are there questions? Dr. Pine, do you have a willing buyer for this particular property? Do you know?
Well, right now, we haven't. We've leased the property out, and so we haven't put it on the market. As you know, though, property in the inner city or in the inner ring suburb is very valuable, so I'm sure there would be a buyer for it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Dreiling, any closing thoughts on this particular House file?
Well, Madam Chair and members, I would hope we would pass Representative Benson's bill. That would be that would help all of our districts, all around the state, all of our students to be in healthy buildings and the kind of buildings they deserve for a good education. And if not, we would appreciate this transition bill so that we don't lose funding that we currently have. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dreiling, and I'm sure this proposal will be considered as we move closer to our deadlines. Representative Dreiling, would you like to move your next House file also and bring forth testifiers for Representative Dreiling's 2475, you would join her at the table, please. Do you have any?
I do. And here he comes. Coming on down. And in the meanwhile, Madam Chair, if you'd like me to move the bill.
Yes, please.
I would move House File 2475.
Representative Garling has moved 2475 to be before us and to be considered for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Go ahead, Representative Garling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have with me Tom Dean from the School Board Association, who will go over the bill in more detail, but I would just preface it by saying that this is yet another option for how to have the kind of facilities that we're talking about today for school.
Welcome, Mr. Dean, and give your name, or state your name for the record, please, and begin your testimony.
Madam Chair, my name is Tom Dean. So I'm legal counsel of the School Board Association. This bill simply provides that when a district issues capital facility bonds, they can be outstanding for 15 years rather than 10 years. And let me explain why this is important. When districts fund, especially when they fund energy improvements to make their buildings more energy efficient, there's two ways for them to do that. One of them, they can do a lease purchase agreement, and that can run out for 15 years, and it may or may not have an energy guarantee behind it. But if it does have an energy guarantee, that'll run out for 15 years. If the other way they can do it is to do capital facility bonds. But capital facility bonds can only go out for 10 years. Sometimes, in order to get that payback period, where you get the savings from putting in the new boiler or whatever, it takes 15 years to get that payback. And there's usually a guarantee that says if that money isn't there, then the person that put in the improvements will pay that difference. The reason it's important is if you issue the capital facility bond, they bear a lower interest rate, so that the district will save money over that 15-year period than if they do a lease. The lease usually runs about somewhere between 40 and 80 basis points higher, because when you do a lease, they're a non-appropriation lease. You're never sure whether the people that do it are never sure whether they're going to get paid back or not, so you pay a little bit more for that. The bonds are general obligation bonds. They know those will be paid, so that they bear a lower interest rate. This bill has no extending that time period for capital facility bonds has no tax implications, because those are netted out. To the extent that they levy debt service for that, their capital levy is reduced by that same amount. So there isn't a tax increase at the district level for this bill.
Other questions from committee members? Mr. James, are there many school districts who would benefit from this, if I may use that verb?
Madam Chair, we think that there are. There's lots of districts that do energy improvement leases now that run out 15 years. But one of the problems that you see is many of the easy projects, you know, changing the light bulbs and those kinds of things, lots of that stuff is done. Now you're down to kind of bigger projects that have a longer payback period. And this would allow us to deal with those in a more efficient way. So we think, you know, it won't be helpful to everyone, but those that qualify for it and that want to do it, it'll be helpful to them.
Thank you, Mr. Dean. And we'll probably know better if we implement this and put it in our session law. Thank you very much. Representative Garland, some closing comments on 2475.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I would just add that we did have Representative Taylor's bill in this committee that we sent to bonding. That, like a lot of our projects, did not make it into the bill. This would be another way to encourage school districts to invest and do the right thing by the environment and then save money in the long term, and it does not have a cost to the state. So I think it's a pretty good combination.
And members do notice that there was a fiscal note handed out, and you can read that for just knowing a little bit more. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Nice job. And Representative Junkie, is he here?
He is.
There he is. Welcome to Representative Junkie, and before he gets technologically situated, this is a bill that was heard in Representative Faust's Facilities Committee, the workforce that we had over the interim, and at that time, we actually had Representative Kathy Breinert's husband, who works in this area at Mankato State University, testify, and if Representative Junkie were making a full court press this year, he might have brought him along, but since this is more prospective, he said he would do at the shorter hearing at least this year. Welcome, Representative Junkie.
Well, and Madam Chair, you're right. I brought this bill from urgency when I started, but now my school district has decided to back off a couple years maybe in their planning. But as you said, Madam Chair, for the committee, I think it's good information to start thinking about for the future, because there absolutely is fiscal sensitivities and implications to what we're going to talk about. My bill originally, or as it sits, House File 3022, basically said that the commissioner can't provide a negative or unfavorable review based on the facility or the site size of the facility of the school. Story: Wilmer, Minnesota is looking at building a new elementary school. We've built a new high school some years ago, and it's time. We have a number of elementary sites that are either underutilized or not used anymore around town, and it was time to perhaps consolidate and go forward with a new elementary school. Now, Wilmer, town about 18,000 people, a regional center, similar to a lot of Winona's, the Fergus Falls, the Marshalls, the others of the state, and again, no detriment to the department at all. We were hopeful that we could get a favorable ruling, but we didn't want it to hold up our project. Now, I'm just going to show you some pictures and maps. This is Wilmer, and the school they were looking to close down is a school by the name of Lincoln, but we also have a Garfield site, and we have the Kennedy sites. We have three actual sites that we use for elementary schools. Again, the city proper is here. The new high school is outside of town, which, again, if you look at the guidelines books, the Guide for Planning School Construction Projects, there's very specific site sizes and parking areas and recreational areas and other things that are needed based on the school, elementary, junior high, high school, and the number of students. So we actually did go outside of town for that facility. I think it's fun to use the overhead, so that's why I'm using it. I don't think enough people use it. You all sit bored, you know.
We want you to have all the fun you can.
We like here. Pictures. So here's one that's more of a the satellite view of Wilmer. And again, as we look, the school we're going to be talking about is right in this area of town. You can see it's in the center of town in a built-up area. The other site, the Garfield site, is over here again in town. I'd also note there's a railroad track that runs, a major rail line that runs here dissecting the town. So actually, as you cross up to the high school, you have to get to it, but the majority of the town is south of that crossing. Again, the problem we had is the site, the Lincoln site, is not large enough according to the standards to rebuild on that site. And so what we started doing was we started looking around town. We don't have a lot of open sites. It's similar to a Minneapolis-St. Paul situation, frankly, and some of these older regional centers. We don't have a lot of open sites, and the school land obviously is owned by the school. What we do have that's open, and there are some, obviously you have to go out on the market and buy. So they have looked in here. They also were looking at sites up in here because of the cost. You have to get out on the edge of town out towards the agricultural land again. And remember, we're crossing a major Highway 12 here, as well as a railroad crossing, which is a BN main line out there, the second busiest rail yard in the state,
next to Northtown is situated in Wilmer, Minnesota. So we have a lot of rail traffic. Again, as we now zoom in on the, see if we can do that. Zoom in at all? Oh, that's about, I know it. It won't zoom in. But anyway, we're just zooming in a little bit on the Lincoln site. What you see here is the school is right here, and the school owns some of the land up to about here. This is City Park, and then this is open land. This was actually field. So what they were doing was trying to discover if there would be a site out here. Some of this has been bought already, but the fact is this site was not big enough according to the guidelines. They would just as soon reuse this site. Lincoln School is an old school, I suppose, built back in the 20s or 30s, and like a lot of our older schools that we see around, it was one of the original buildings in town, and it just, again, according to the guidelines, doesn't work. Now, what does that mean? The school is estimating at a minimum to buy the size site they want out here in some private development or outside of town with probably an extra $2 million onto their building project. And that's what spurred us to come in here and start talking to your committee, because, again, you also assist in building these buildings, and obviously you fund them into the future, so there are fiscal implications to this. And I think, I guess the reason we're presenting is this gets you thinking, perhaps we ought to reinvest in our guideline book over at the department, or work with them, maybe statutorily, maybe in rules, or maybe even just redoing the guidelines for schools so that they don't panic when they go out here. We had a search committee that was out looking for land. That's when I got involved. I said, well, wait a minute. We've got this site. We have the Garfield site over on the other side of town. Garfield site is a full block. This is basically a full block, and in fact, the city said, well, if it meant keeping the school in the neighborhood here, we'd maybe even consider giving them part of this land, but it just wasn't quite big enough. So, again, that's why it's here. Hopefully we can move forward with some policies in the future, Madam Chair, for reuse of these, particularly with elementary school. I mean, we don't have a lot of cars parking because we're not high school kids driving. Again, the recreation areas are there now. We utilize the city parkland as well as the school land. We thought it was appropriate, but again, it didn't meet the guidelines. I was confident that they would give us a positive recommendation, but we didn't want to take any chances vis-a-vis the bill. Now, because of you not giving us the money the second half, no, I'm kidding. They have delayed the project now for maybe a year or two because of some financial implications going on out in our districts out there, but they do fully intend to move forward. So while I don't probably need this pass this year, I'd like to start working with your committee and the department to understand 2 years from now, hopefully they're not out looking for land. They can say we can reuse one of the sites that the district already owns.
Thank you, Representative Junkie. I didn't move your bill because you said
right.
It would be for next year, but I know that Representative Faust may talk about this more when he's up next with his school facilities work group report. That I think the people that were at the hearing liked this idea, and so when you come forward with it, I don't know if you'll be looking at Wilmer being the pilot, but I would urge you to think a little more broadly and work with Representative Briner's husband. He's got a different last name. I forgot his last name. Tony Filipovich, that's it. I think a threshold bill is always more preferable to this committee than just something for one district unless it's a pilot. So as you're working on it, hopefully you'll think about that.
And I agree, Madam Chair, members. I mean, like I say, Mankato, Winona, Wilmer, there's a lot of these older regional centers that are kind of similar to what you see. And it probably wouldn't hold, like I say, for the high school, fine. Go outside of town, people are driving. We know you got to have parking lots, facilities. But for elementary kids that are either walking or biking to school, in the neighborhood schools, boy, you hate to move them outside of town, and that's what we are going through with this.
Thank you, Representative Junkie. And some people on this committee know that the three cities of the first class already have the ability to do this. We have three questions before you get away, and I'm just going to end it at these three questions. If anybody else thinks of one, they can ask Representative Junkie later because we want to get to Representative Faust. But Representative Marquardt, Representative Demmer, and Representative Erickson. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Junkie, I can understand
schools be named after President Lincoln and President Kennedy, but President Garfield? He was president for less than half a year and assassinated in 1881.
He's a cute little animal.
Yeah. Well, we'll bring that message back.
Yeah, I would like to know the history like that. It was 1881.
I don't know why.
Representative Demmer, are you going to be able to follow that?
Or do you know anything? Well, I might talk about something more education oriented. Although that's educational. That was good. That was good. All right, Representative Funky, right? Yeah, right. I met you back a few years ago. I think it's a great idea, quite frankly. You know, every school district that has remodeling or builds has an architect. And architects' jobs are to study space and determine needs and what they're supposed to be. And I think we would need definitely the Department of Education to weigh in and what they do in determining this, and maybe the original impetus for them weighing in on these sizes. But I know, for example, Pine Island School District was rest partly in my area, had a failed bond referendum that partly was because of this issue. Mm-hmm. There was a determination made by the department that their space wasn't big enough. They had a disagreement in their community, whether it was or whether it wasn't, and it caused an issue. And quite frankly, I think local people with their architects, now maybe with some guidelines and that sort of thing from the department would be fine, but to say the department has the authority to say you can or can't or make it more difficult because they happen to think of a certain size, I'd like to hear the rationale for that. But otherwise, I like the idea that we can let school districts and their architects determine space and needs and whatever.
Madam Chair, one of the other considerations that we learned as we toured with the bonding committee, obviously we look at a lot of buildings. One of the questions we ask is it going to be a LEED certified or a green type of building? We know that the best green building is not tearing down the old building. There's so much built up energy in there. When you built the building, you mine the ores for the steel, and you have all the labor and you have everything in there, and that energy is still there, and you tear it down, it's just gone. So reuse of buildings is another big thing. If you can incorporate some of those buildings and expand on them for the new school, I think would be a consideration nowadays too.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dunkey, this is an excellent idea. How many acres were you short?
That's a good question. I don't have that answer.
Okay.
I didn't ask my superintendent. After Kathy Leadham, who was the head of the Superintendent Association, will be down here tomorrow for some business. I didn't want to make her come down for two, and or she.
We'll get those answers next year when you come forward with your bill that encompasses opportunities for all.
Yep.
Thank you, Representative Dunkey.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
And Representative Faust, you've got the last 20 minutes to use as you wish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill...
And Representative Faust, you don't have a number.
We don't have a jacket yet, so
yep,
we don't have a report. This is a bill, I gave a report on what our committee found before, and this is basically now putting it in bill form. So a lot of this is stuff that has already been talked about, as well as some of the other bills that we've heard today are actually part of this bill, I guess. So I'll go through the points rather quickly and leave time for questions and the other testifiers here. The first thing that we're doing here is equalizing debt service levy, and we're basically putting that back to what it was the last time that it was set, and we're adjusting for inflation for that to happen. And so that's the first part of this. The second part is to clarify whether or not removal of elevators can be used with our health and safety dollars can be used to pay for removal of elevators. This was something that I'm not sure if it was state or federal changes required several districts to have to take out elevators, and they found out that under the current requirements they were not able to use health and safety dollars, so we're clarifying that so that they can do that. The next is the health and safety levy, which we're adjusting again for inflation. Alternative facilities review, we've talked about quite a bit with some of the previous bills, but what we're doing is we're saying that if this is a good program, let's make it available to all the districts in the state. You've got some handouts on that we got from Representative Benson when he testified, and whether you like it or not, at least let's treat all the school districts the same, so that's what we're doing there, is we're opening it up to everybody. The deferred maintenance revenue, we're changing from $60 to $100. Rulemaking, rules currently, and this is going after what Representative Junkie was just talking about, is we're saying that if a school wants to build a facility on a site that isn't quite big enough, that the state cannot say, no, you can't go forward with this project if that's the only issue they've got. If they do have issues with the traffic flow in and out, that's a legitimate concern, but just because it isn't, you know, in their mind large enough, cannot hold them back. We listened to Kathy Briner's husband talk about this, and there are several districts across the state that have run into this problem, and we don't think that that makes sense to do that. The next thing we've got is adjusted next tax capacity equalizing factor, and again, we're adjusting that. Yep. And the lease levy then is going from $100 to $150. This was an issue that Representative Benson also talked about. And on the intermediate school districts, we're going from 25 to 50. And then the next thing is we're going to take a look at when a school builds a new building, 6% of the cost of the building is architecture fees. And it seems to me that when we're building as many buildings across the state as that we are, it would be responsible government to try to, since we're duplicating that over and over again, to try to use some of the plans more than once. And if we could do that, we could save millions of dollars across the state. So I think that is what the next thing is trying to find a way to make that work. It wouldn't mean that they would have to use the state's plans, but if they do that, it could certainly save the district a lot of money. So I think it would make sense to look at that. And the last thing is to do a survey, and I'm not looking at something that's going to take days of work for the superintendents to do, but hopefully just hours or less, and to find out where we're at as far as facilities go. When the library people were here and testified a week or so ago, they said we're $160 million behind in building. They knew exactly where they were at. When it comes to school buildings, we don't know where we're at, and that's a problem. One of the things that I want to talk about here that this bill does is that it increases the money that school districts will be able to levy for their repairs and maintenance on the buildings. And I think that's an important thing. One of the superintendents was talking about how they used to be able to take money out of the general aid to pay for that type of thing. But that has been scrunched so much that they can't even do that anymore. And so they're not maintaining the buildings the way they should be. And because of that, the buildings become disposable, which means that in 30 or 40 years they go and they go, okay, now we have to build again because they haven't been able to properly maintain it. So if you look at responsible government, we need to make sure that there's money available so that they can do that. So very quickly, that's the bill. I'll turn it over to the testifiers and let them introduce themselves, and we'll go from there.
And before we do that, thank you, Representative Faust, for your leadership on this very important task force. And do you want to acknowledge the other members that served on it so I don't leave anyone out?
Representative Benson was on the committee also, and we had a lot of staff that helped a lot. And Randy Demmer, Representative Demmer, but he was so busy whenever we tried to accommodate him, but unable to, but we did try to keep him in the loop as much as we could.
Sounds like from his comments today that he's supportive of your work. So, all right. Whoever's the first person, if you could state your name and title for the tape and then proceed. Representative Demmer, you were just acknowledged and appreciated.
Do I need to admit?
Representative Demmer?
Madam Chair, do I need to know the source of that to know?
We'll let you guess.
Okay. Thanks.
Whoever's the first testifier.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brian Moore. I'm the Director of Buildings and Grounds for Hutchinson Public Schools. I also serve as the Legislative Chair for the Minnesota Educational Facilities Management Professionals. We're the ladies and gentlemen that are charged with maintaining our school facilities. I'm very appreciative of the fact to come here today and speak on behalf of Representative Faust's bill. I'm also appreciative to hear that we have a large investment in our school facilities, and the most green building we can build is keeping the ones that we have. When the committee first brought the subject up of school construction, I kind of looked at it as actually two different components. One is maintaining what we have, and the other factor is building. This bill, I just want to read a statement from the Guide from the Planning of School Construction Facility Projects. It says, the state of Minnesota has a constitutional responsibility for education and the equality of opportunity for students to learn, and that includes the physical environment that school facilities provide for learning and teaching. The removal of the square footage requirement for alternative facilities bonding goes a long way for the equality throughout the state. Outstate districts that are declining in enrollment or stable at best have as much difficulty in passing a school construction bond as the large metropolitan districts. That will be a way to maintain the investments that the taxpayers have made out there. The statewide condition assessment that's in there is Representative Benson mentioned the past estimate that there's approximately a $4 billion backlog in deferred maintenance in our school facilities. We really don't have an honest assessment of what's out there. The Department of Transportation has bridge inspectors, road inspectors, and they can tell you to a penny on what their deferred maintenance backlog is. School districts cannot. And I think it's an important step to move forward to understand what that backlog is in facilities before we can address it as a state. The three places where we need to build are when there's growth, when a building is totally non-functional to support education, or it's beyond its useful life. And when it comes to that point, when we can't maintain it through alternative facilities or general aid revenue that's available, then it is time to build. And I think that the state needs to treat that as an infrastructure issue. I did hear mention of the bonding bill. I know that's not a mechanism at this time, but it is an infrastructure issue. Modifying the debt service equalization will help many districts in their ability to actually pass bonds out there. Basically, there is no state aid at this portion, at this point for the majority of the districts out there, and that will be much appreciated. And the last point is to build what we do have as sustainable as possible, to have those buildings that are LEED certified and that we can operate them with the revenue that we have. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Morton. Welcome, and please state your name for the tape.
Madam Chair, members of the board, of the committee, my name is Ron Bratley. I'm the president of Minnesota Educational Facility Management Professional, and I'm also working with the Osceola area schools to save some energy money, which is an interesting job. I'd like to address in particular Section 11 about sustainability, or the buzz term today is green, and also facility legislation in general. I'd like to encourage that language such as this be included in all the construction initiatives. During my tenure at Elk River, we were had the opportunity to build the first LEED certified building. That's building, not school, but the first LEED certified building, which was an elementary school, and we just completed the first gold certified elementary building in the Midwest. And so I have a little interest and a little experience with green buildings. I've also done some consulting around the nation and states such as Vermont, and presently I'm working with the governor's office in Kentucky to put language such as this into existence so that it will lead other, and I didn't mean that, no pun intended there, but will lead districts and all public buildings to be LEED certified or at least equivalent to LEED certification. Energy is something that's on the minds of everybody, whether it's at the gas pump or it's your home heating bill. And I'll continue. In schools, it's one of the top five expenditures in their budget. And all schools have a budget issue, as you well know right now. So whether it's a new building or a renovation, I think sustainable initiatives should be considered. It's a win-win situation. Green buildings will save 30% to 50% of energy. That's good for the budget. It's good for the environment. And it just makes sense, dollars and cents. And more importantly, it's the right thing to do. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bradley. Any questions? Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, could Mr. Crow or Mr. Strom remind myself and the members of the committee the difference between adjusted net tax capacity and referendum market value?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, referendum market value is the assessed value of all of the property in the district, less the farm and cabin property. So it's essentially a bigger number. The adjusted net tax capacity is the tax base, the assessed value times the class rate for each of the classes of property. Business property, for example, has a class rate of 2%, homes 1%. So a home assessed at $200,000 would show up on referendum market value as $200,000 and on adjusted net tax capacity as $2,000.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair and Representative Faust, on the definition of statewide adjusted net tax capacity equalizing factor, it looks like we're using... as part of the quotient, we're using the total number of adjusted marginal cost pupil units, and I'm wondering if there's a reason why we're using the AMCPU as opposed to just the pupil count.
I would refer to
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, that's a good question. We have equalizing factors based on all sorts of pupil counts right now, and I don't think there's any particular reason to use adjusted marginal cost versus adjusted pupil units.
Madam Chair, Mr. Strong, am I correct in saying that if we were using this index, it would not be based on the number of students in there, it would be on the weighted factor of students, so that would, okay, I just want to make sure I remember that. And then, Madam Chair, when we're wrapped up here, I have a question for you.
Okay. For
when this bill is done being completed before you adjourn.
Okay, very good. I know you'll help me remember. We didn't have a lot of sleep last night. And I don't see any other questions. Are there any testifiers from the audience on this bill? Okay, Representative Faust, any concluding comments?
Yeah, I guess that I would like to just put in one last word on this bill is that it really increases the local control. And I think that that's a good thing. It also significantly increases the fairness, I think, between school districts, between large ones that were getting some things that the smaller ones weren't. So I think that with those two last parting comments, I'll leave it at that. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Rick and Faust. And I think that this bill reflects the kind of efforts that we try to pass on this committee if we're able to, when it's adjusted to be fair to all types of districts, and unfortunately, whether we like it or not, we're certainly having to rely on the local districts, so why hamstring them when we aren't doing much to help them in this department? All right, we are at the end of the agenda, so Representative Garofalo, your question. And if you're going to ask me what are we doing and how much money are we going to have, I'll just tell you right off the bat, I have no idea.
No. Well, first of all, Madam Chair, I think you know that I'm upset right now. Because you let Representative Erickson chair the meeting instead of me. So I'm going to go throw a temper tantrum on the House floor.
Rest and Apple, your apple was delicious.
But in all seriousness, there's been some capital chatter about use of the property tax recognition shift and the K-12 education shift. Nothing official, of course, just hallway chatter. And I'm wondering if those matters, both the property tax recognition shift and the general education shift, that those would be purviews of this committee in terms of we would take a look at it and we would pass it, or if perhaps Representative Winchesky or Representative Marquardt, if that would be subject of that area, or do we not know?
Representative Garofalo, we don't know definitively, but I think you just asked the $64,000 question for this session. And I hope all of you will join me in making sure that we have that discussion in this committee, because we're the ones that have to pay it back. We have to pay for every dollar that anyone borrows. Pardon me? Ms. Shannon Patrick has just told me that Mr. Strom has done a memo on this very topic that will be in our... Oh, Mr. Crow did it? Okay, we'll give credit for credit. I'm on a Mr. Strom roll today. Mr. Crow did it. It will be in our packets tomorrow. And so maybe when we all get a chance to read it, we could have a little bit of this discussion again, because I think it's a very important discussion that you brought up. And we will be, even though the state law says that this anything borrowed from us has to be paid back after the contingency funds,
It's always, anything can be changed around here, but if we're trying to talk about long-term education finance reform and adequate funding and shifting happens, whether we do it or some other committee, then it sets us back for that entire effort. And I'm hoping that sometime in our lifetime here, we get to actually do that. And so we can have the kind of results that Massachusetts is now seeing when they invested significantly in education 8 years ago. So I appreciate your question. And let's read the memo so we all hear what Mr. Crow had to say. And I would be very open to discussing this some more after that.
Madam Chair,
Representative Garofalo.
Anything I can do to help you defend your turf in this committee. And for some reason, I was trying to remember the property tax recognition shift. I thought an argument may have taken place in a previous session with previous leadership about whether K-12 would be involved in that or not. And I feel strongly that it should be the purview of this committee. And regardless of whether it took place or not, in my opinion, it's the jurisdiction of this committee.
Representative Brackwell, I agree with you strongly, and I'm going to need all the help I can get. Representative Dietrich.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Would it be possible for us to get that memo before tomorrow's meeting?
Mr. Crow, thank you, Representative Dietrich. Mr. Crow, do you don't have copies with us today?
No.
Okay.
We can get them electronically.
He'll make sure that we get them one way or the other before the meeting. That's a good suggestion.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Very
Representative Erickson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask Representative Faust if we were going to get a fiscal note on his bill.
Representative Faust, or Mr. Strom, or Mr. Crow. Yes, we will get one, the staff has said.
Yes.
If there's no further questions or anything, the meeting is adjourned.